We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Tickets are on sale now for 105.7 The Fan's Fanniversary, happening Saturday, April 4th at Barrel House Live in Falston from 1 to 4 p.m. Enjoy light fare and two free non-alcoholic drinks or beer or glasses of wine. A cash bar will also be available. All your favorite fan personalities will be on hand answering your questions and hosting Know Your Show, giving you a chance to win concert tickets. Visit 105.7thefan.com for more details and to purchase tickets to this all-ages event.
This is WJZ-FM, Catonsville, Baltimore's sports talk at 105.7 The Fan, and always live on the free Odyssey app. From the OuchGuy.com sports desk, here's Tim Barbalace.
Coby Mayo is expected to get plenty of work at third base during Jordan Westberg's absence. Mayo's bat has always been his calling card, while he has worked hard to improve his defense. O's president of baseball ops, Mike Elias, is happy with Mayo's progress defensively.
He's good. He's moving good. I mean, he's a great defender for his size and his body type, and he's got a ton of arm strength, and he's a natural infielder. But, you know, the hot corner at the major league level is really hard, and, you know, getting to that level of play is something that he's been working on.
NFL teams and draft prospects are arriving in Indianapolis for the scouting combine. GM and head coach availability will take place tomorrow and Wednesday, with the first on-field workouts happening on Thursday. From the Bob Bell Kia Nissan of Essex Weather Center, temps are in the low 40s with an overnight low of 23. Tomorrow has partly cloudy skies and a high of 38. This Fan Flash is sponsored by the Dr. Lairfield Smile Design Center. Call 410-321-1100 to schedule your appointment today. I'm Tim Barbalace, Ravens Terps, and your home for the most Orioles spring training coverage. Sports Radio 105.7 The Fan.
Inside Access with Ken Wyman and Tim Barbalace. Sports Radio 105.7 The Fan.
So there are always these created storylines during spring training, and sometimes they turn into real, and sometimes they're just spring training fake storylines. Well, one of them, before the games even started, was possibly a bounce back for Yennier Cano. I know our friend Jacob Calvin Meyer, he tweeted out that Craig Albernaz, the manager, during the early workouts, referred to Cano's stuff as gross. He's made one appearance so far, just one inning, scoreless, two strikeouts. Could Yennier Cano, who was quite frankly bad a year ago, could he get close to what he was a couple of years ago?
Hope so. Look, the Orioles, they're counting on all of these guys. And Mike Elias was on with Ben and Cordell last week, and they asked him, hey, are you looking to bring in anybody to upgrade the bullpen? And Mike Elias said, free agency, there's not really anyone out there. Maybe we'll swing a trade at the end of spring training. So it sounds like they're going to roll with these guys. And Yennier Cano, he was an all-star a couple of years ago. He fell off a little bit in 2024, and then he fell off a cliff last year.
He was terrible.
Going through his baseball reference, I forgot at the beginning of the season, like, he went his first 12 appearances without giving up an earned run.
Huh.
And then following that point, guys, he had a 6.27 ERA in his last 53 games. 6.27.
That's not good, Bo.
And the whip has really gone up. He especially got killed at home in 35 home appearances, 9.13 OPS, 6.03 ERA. And his changeup is what just got thumped. Batters were hitting 417 off his changeup.
Used to be unhittable.
Yeah, 667 slug off his changeup. Now, he still was getting a lot of ground balls last year, 94th percentile there. But
a lot of balls in the air, though, too.
I know.
Much more than we're used to.
I Now, with Cano, it's not an instance where he has to make this club out of spring training because he does still have two more options. But I know with spring training results in general, you take him with a boulder of salt. But, yeah, man, it would be good for him to have a strong spring training just to build some confidence because it just wasn't there last year. And they tried so many things. They tried backing off of him in June and giving him more breaks. And it looked like that was helping for a little bit until it didn't. But I can't say with a ton of confidence. Look, can he be better than he was last year? That's a very low bar to clear. But do I think we're going to get that 2023 All-Star Yennier Cano? I don't think so.
The only reason I have any optimism that he can find it is the schizophrenic nature of bullpen arms to begin with from year to year. Like, it's so rare. Like, Mariano Rivera is just the ultimate outlier. And you see, like, Bobby Thigpen once set the record for saves in a season. And then a couple years ago, he was basically done. Zach Britton had that great season for the Orioles. He was never the same again.
Jim Johnson was incredible and then got killed in the playoffs. Terrible. Like, yeah.
So, am I hope was the word you used, and hope that doesn't help sell playoff tickets. But if somebody in that coaching staff can figure out a way to get that changeup back to what it was close, then there's a chance. Ben, do you have any confidence?
Slightly, but I do think that they have to approach it the right way. If it ain't working, it's got to be done. And I know last year was a little slower, and you could kind of tinker with things because you were in a bad spot. But early on in the year, like if it's not rolling well for Cano,
you can't just keep running him out.
Yeah, they got to be ready to cut ties quickly, figure something out. And I know when he was on with us, he said there wasn't much out there. Well, the arms that are out there right now are much better than what's going to be their opening day in that time. And at that point, they might go younger and bring up one of their prospects and go to the pen. He's got to figure out the changeup because that was something that we just saw sliding right under bats. In his best year, he was throwing the sinker off of it, getting ground balls. But even then, when Batista's been out and Cano's had to close, it's never worked well.
So no.
Keep him in the seventh inning role. Like, you got Kittredge, you brought back Helsley. He can't go back to the ninth.
And also, I know you would bring it up all the time, Ken. Give him a clean inning.
Oh,
if he comes on runners on, dude, jeez, it is a nightmare. But the other thing, guys, where he was a complete liability for them last year, lefties destroyed him. He was one of the worst relief pitchers in baseball against left-handed bats. 948 OPS. He was solid against righties. It was 663, but lefties would kill him.
He has options.
Yeah, he's got two options.
If he comes out this season and he's not good, you send him down ASAP. Like, you can't be stubborn about this like they were. And they're famously stubborn. Like, they ran Craig Kimbrell out there many more times than they had to. And before they eventually DFA'd him, like, if it's not working, you can't win a pennant in April, but you can help lose a pennant in April. Like, don't cost yourself multiple baseball games because this guy can't get out.
You saw it last year. Their season was over before Memorial Day. You're firing your manager before Memorial Day. It's over at that point. But another interesting aspect for this bullpen, at least when you bring up, like, there's not a ton of guys right now projected, and just looking at Fangraphs projections for the bullpen, that have options. And that's where maybe you do have to kind of almost pigeonhole, and we'll get into it on the other side, getting one of those young arms, whether it's a Povich, a McDermott, a Brandon Young, or they're going to have to get one of those guys in there just to give them the ability to option guys.
It's pretty clear, though, assuming health, that Yennier Cano is going to be in the opening day bullpen.
Unless he completely brings the gas can to the mound.
That's usually
every
a good thing.
Time. Blowing it up is what I'm saying, not the Grayson gas can. Yeah, he's going to be on this club. Just because the other guys don't have the experience or the success that Cano had, and I know that doesn't include last year at all, but this guy has made an All-Star.
Ben, he's on the opening day roster, isn't he?
Has to be. Quite honestly, I think he's going to be using leverage before Enns and Garcia.
Like, yeah. Oh, yeah, I agree.
For now. And Wells, they respect Wells. But, I mean, with what they have, bringing back Kittredge, signing Helsley, as good as that is, I still would expect to see him in a leverage spot pretty early on.
By the way, if you care about these things, Orioles and Braves playing spring training baseball today. Orioles trail 10-3 in the sixth. Old friend Jorge Mateo hit a grand slam in this game for the Atlanta Braves. Orioles were down 2-0, then took a 3-2 lead. And then the Braves, they went nuts in the sixth inning, scoring eight runs and lead 10-3. Coming up next, Bone alluded to it. What about some of these guys that were starters either in the minors or a year ago? Povich and Wells and McDermott. And even Brandon Young, what are their roles this year? Could they be in that bullpen? We'll discuss next here on The Fan.
Next time on the Big Bad Morning Show.
How great was college basketball Monday night? Also, the O's take the diamond on Monday for exhibition baseball. And reports are that Lamar Jackson has been engaged in off-season activities with the team. But is he ready to sign the extension?
Tomorrow on Sports Radio 105.7 The Fan.
Hey, it's Ken Wyman reminding you to prepare for spring. Step into comfort with art supports from the Good Feet Store. And by now, you've heard my story. A little over 50, a little overweight, out of shape, knee pain, hip pain, back pain. Ibuprofen was a temporary fix, and then I discovered the Good Feet Store. I went to the store in Hunt Valley. Go to goodfeet.com, find the store nearest you. I took a test drive in those Good Feet art supports, and here I am over a year later. I've lost weight. I'm exercising. No knee pain, no hip pain, no back pain. Don't need to take that ibuprofen anymore. I feel better, and I owe it to the Good Feet Store. They got me on the road to success. It's been incredible. I used to go home at night, and I would just stay on the main level of my house because it hurt to walk upstairs. So, like, I wouldn't go upstairs till it was time for bed because it was painful to go up and downstairs. Now, no big deal. Run upstairs and take care of things I need to take care of during the day or night and just go right back downstairs. It's been a life change. So I stress to you, it helped me. It could help you, too. Get yourself going. Take a test drive in those Good Feet art supports. Go to the Good Feet store, and you could possibly feel better like me. Go to goodfeet.com for more details.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey wherever you get your podcasts.
Inside Access with Ken Wyman and Tim Barbalace. Sports Radio 105.7 The Fan.
Yeah, Tyler came out through great. I think we all know his changeup is a really good pitch, but the way he attacked the zone, you know, that's kind of like the story of the day for us, right? Whereas yesterday, count leverage, attacking the zone. Today, we can be better, but the way Tyler came out and threw the ball was really encouraging.
That's Craig Albernaz from the other day, where Tyler Wells threw a scoreless inning, and he's got that one appearance so far this spring, and it seems pretty certain, unless there's a number of injuries, that Tyler Wells, who we have been on record saying for a while should be in the bullpen, but they have had him as a starter, and to their credit, he did lead the league in whip at the All-Star break 1 year, so he's had some success as a starter, but seems more valuable to this team, the bullpen. Well, it seems like he's going to be in the bullpen, so we're going to look at some guys who have been starters either in the minors or at the major league level and whether or not they could be in this bullpen. And we'll start with Tyler Wells.
Yeah, well, Wells is the layup. I remember doing a TMI a couple weeks ago just saying, let's stop messing around with Tyler Wells. And you said it, Ken. He's a very useful player, and he has been really rock solid as a starter. But what we have seen year after year is him start to wear down. They've had to place him on the IL numerous times, whether it's due to an oblique injury. He obviously had the elbow surgery last year, and he'll start the season strong and then kind of fade down the stretch. Where doing it this way, you're going to help. Obviously, it's a lot easier to manage innings in the bullpen, and Tyler Wells has pitched a whopping 37 innings over the past couple of years. So he's going to be on a natural innings restriction, but Wells has been really, really good during his time as a reliever. In 49 appearances, a 0.79 whip, a 3.49 ERA, And I think he could kind of be a power arm for them and someone that could go multiple innings if needed.
So that's Tyler Wells. How about Cade Povich? Now, Cade Povich started the game today against the Braves, went two innings, one hit, one walk, one strikeout. Doesn't seem like there's room for him at the end in the rotation, but could he be part of this bullpen?
I think it makes sense. You add another left-handed arm in this pen, and we've just seen over the past couple of years with Cade Povich, the more batters see him, the more he gets hit. And you can look at his career splits, you can look at the individual year splits. Each time through the order, he struggles more. And it's always that one inning. He always has that one blow-up inning that really just messes up his starts. Now, I think what's kind of tough for the Orioles is the fact that you're going to have, you know, one or two of these guys down at Norfolk as kind of that next man up if and when they end up having injuries in the starting rotation. So it's not like they can convert.
Because you can't ramp them back.
Exactly. Yeah. It's not like they can convert all of these guys to relievers because you're going to need some of that deep depth. But I think Povich does make a lot of sense in the pen.
So this is from Alex Fast, and Ben, I might need your help with this because there's some he's using some abbreviations and I might not know. So he says, interesting stuff from Povich in his spring training debut. New FF shape, 20 avert with six less horizontal movement. Velo down a tick to be expected, but this new shape is going to be interesting to monitor. Might benefit the curveball.
It's forcing fastball.
Okay, so what do you think of, about that? Is that something that interests you? Also, we debuted a new, is that SL slider, slurve? What is it?
Slider. I mean, we'll see. It's good that he's, you know, working on changing things, and he's probably going to have to change himself. I don't think that there's going to be many starts for him this year. I think at some point they might have to force him as the left-handed guy in the bullpen. And Aiken, we've seen him deal with injuries in the past before. He would be the top candidate to fill Aiken's role if it were to come to that, where he can come and get you two or three innings in those types of spots. So it's good to see, you know, Povich trying new things, but I just don't, right now I don't see where that's going to be at the big league level.
So you don't see him in the pen?
No, Cade Povich, no. I don't think he'll start the year in the pen. Mm-hmm. I think he'll start at them. I think he'll start AAA.
To your point, Bowen, they probably need
him.
They
need arms. And look, I haven't been a Brandon Young fan. I just don't necessarily see it with him. I know he had that incredible start in Houston.
Yeah, where he almost had the no-hitter.
He was flirting with a no-no, but I don't know. I see at least more potential out of Cade Povich than I see from Brandon Young.
Yeah, Brandon Young, to me, if he ever is a consistent major leaguer, it's in the bullpen, not as a starter.
Yeah, we'll always have the fun, what was it, the immaculate inning? And then
Houston. Yeah, Houston.
No, the immaculate inning, I think was the separate.
Yes, you're right.
Yeah, the immaculate inning against the Mets, and then in Houston, he was flirting with the no-no, and then the infield hit got him. Chase McDermott. To me, this feels like a bullpen lock.
Yeah, that seems like a slam dunk there. And you kind of wish they would have done this sooner. But Chase McDermott's also another one of those guys that's just dealt with a ton of injuries. You know, he had to get shut down at the end of 2024. Last year, he was on the IL, what, three separate times. But I think McDermott makes a lot of sense. How I see it is, I don't want to say he has to be in the bullpen, but it gets back to what I was saying prior to the break. The only guys with options, like Helsley, Kittredge, Aiken, you're not, you know, Cano has two options. Tyler Wells has two options, but you're not really looking to send down Tyler Wells. Something crazy would have to happen, or just massive inefficiencies out of him. But you'd like to have another one guy in there to have the ability for options, you know, in a game where the bullpen's getting extremely taxed and you need a fresh arm to come up. So ideally you'd like at least one of these guys that we're saying to step up and really seize the moment in spring training.
What you're saying is if you had your druthers, you'd want some more flexibility in the bullpen.
Yeah, for sure. 100%. You want that possibility because being so limited with guys, you know, you're not going to want to option Tyler Wells. And Yennier Cano, that'll be good to have.
If he gets optioned, it's because he stinks.
Exactly. But to have another one of those guys to provide you the flexibility in there, I think would be big.
Ben, do you make it a unanimous Chase McDermott in the bullpen?
Yeah, but it, as Tim said, it should have happened a pretty long time ago, especially looking at what they have. I know they wanted to turn him and even Seth Johnson when they had him into a starter, but I thought for both of those guys it made sense to be in relief roles, at least earlier in their career. And then you can see the Michael Kings and guys later in their career. At some point, whether it's them or their agent, they're going to want to force themselves into a starting role, and you can worry about that then. But just with how things are built, he just has to be a reliever.
So the Orioles are losing in spring training baseball today 10-4. If we're looking at guys, and this is a weird game, like I don't recognize half of the names that pitched. The Orioles have thrown 8 pitchers in this game. I guess Rico Garcia is a guy that might possibly be in the bullpen.
Yeah.
Keegan Aiken gave up 2 runs in 1 inning, 3 hits, and then the possibility, which we don't think is likely because he's probably going to be at Norfolk in the rotation, Cade Povich, 2 innings, 1 hit, 1 walk, 1 strikeout. The other guys, Espada, Paredes, Aitchen, Marsh, Walker, I don't know these guys.
Yeah. But, you know, Garcia had the clean inning. Cade Povich, as you mentioned, he was strong, but... Yeah, you got to have that extra bench down at Norfolk when these injuries happen, because it's really even more important this year, Ken, with the Kyle Bradish having to kind of balance that situation, not throwing many innings. We know that Zach Eflin with the back, that could flare up at any point. So you got to have someone just one call away.
Before we step out, Ben, I want to get your thoughts. Orioles signed Tyro Estrada to a minor league deal invite to spring training.
I like the depth if they need it, but I don't know that he is going to end up making this team. He was one of the more intriguing players years ago with the Giants, but the Giants offense, we know what that's always been, and he's kind of went downhill since, kind of bounced around a little bit. I know he was in Colorado as well. That didn't work out. So we'll see. We'll see how it works. But again, unless somebody else goes down, this is just depth for me for now. We're talking off air a little bit, but I don't think it'll be like Tony Kemp.
Yeah.
You break that with the team for a week and a half catch. And end up going down when holiday's ready, just 8 games or whatever it was in the mind.
Yeah, that was a fun time. Tony Kemp made that catch in Fenway Park.
A $1 million catch?
Yes. It'd be
yeah, it was. That's what he was getting paid.
You know who else gets paid? NFL football players. And especially when they get drafted high in the NFL, obviously their second contract, there's more money. But you get drafted to the NFL, you make real money. And we're going to take a look back before we look ahead. And the Ravens 2025 draft class, what do we think of them? And who could make a big jump next year? We'll discuss next here on The Fan.
If you missed today's Vinny and Haney show, have segments, hours, or full show delivered daily to your phone. Subscribe to the podcast and listen anytime on the free Odyssey app or wherever you find podcasts. Vinny and Haney, live on The Fan's YouTube channel. Tomorrow, 10 till 2, 105.7 The Fan.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Every day, complete coverage of Orioles spring training with Ryan Ripken, Steve Molesky, and the entire fan lineup as we gear up for opening day, March 26th, live from Pickles Pub against the Minnesota Twins. Baseball is back, and it's on 105.7 The Fan. From the OuchGuy.com sports desk, here's Tim Barbalays.
There are jobs to be won in the Orioles bullpen. Manager Craig Albernaz recently talked about the importance of having a balance of righties and lefties in the pen.
The best day, I mean, I think having multiple lefties is very intriguing. But with everyone in our camp, that's where our pitching coaches are solving, is to make our guys matchup proof. You know, so righties can get out lefties and lefties can get out righties. You know, we preach winning the line of scrimmage. Hopefully we can keep that going all through camp.
NFL teams and draft prospects are arriving in Indianapolis for the scouting combine. GM and head coach availability will take place tomorrow and Wednesday, with the first on-field workouts happening on Thursday. From the Bob Bell Kia Nissan of Essex Weather Center, temps are in the low 40s with an overnight low of 23. Tomorrow has partly cloudy skies and a high of 38.
I'm Tim Barbalace, Ravens Terps, and your home for the most Orioles spring training coverage. Sports Radio 105.7 The Fan.
Inside Access with Ken Wyman and Tim Barbalace. Sports Radio 105.7 The Fan.
Draft will be here before you know it, Bone. So before we look ahead, let's look back to last year's draft. A draft that, quite frankly, we were very excited about after it happened. The Ravens took Malachi Starks in the first round, and we felt that was a plug-and-play guy. And while I think he was good at times last year, he did not show a lot of the playmaking ability that was a big part of his game at Georgia. But he was okay. And then in the second round, they took Mike Green, who dropped because of off-field concerns, and thought, well, I thought he'd lead the team in sacks, and it didn't really happen for him a year ago, but he think he could take a jump the next year. And then it starts at the top, and Emory Jones, who they took in the third round and missed most of the season, kind of a redshirt year. So we can go down the list if we'd like. They had a lot of draft picks, but those, let's start with those three guys. Like, do you see a jump for them this season?
It's got to happen. And I think when you look at this draft class as a whole, 11 players taken, and really the biggest standout you could maybe say was Teddy Buchanan.
Yes, and who then tore the ACL.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And now the start to next season for him, very much murky at best. But just working your way down, Malachi Starks, I think there were times this year, the Texans game jumps out, where he looked a little over his skis, but Starks, you can look at all of the high draft picks that the Ravens have had in recent years, whether it's Marlon Humphrey, Kyle Hamilton, Nate Wiggins, like those guys weren't day one starters. They were eased in during their rookie year, where Starks, he just got thrown right into the deep end. And you're right. I think I remember Harbs talking about Starks taking on such a leadership role at that rookie mini camp where he's like running through plays.
Well, yeah, they sold us on it. He's a veteran already.
Yeah, he's a veteran already, where he didn't get his hands on the football as much as we were hoping. He had those back-to-back games in which he got an interception, but only four passes defensed on the season. Like, I think he was fine. He was fine, but you're hoping for a bigger step in his second season.
Beltway Ben, are you sold that Malachi Starks could take a jump in year two?
Sold, no. I think that he can, but we got to see it. It just felt like we were sold the plug and play that he was going to be an immediate impact guy and we'll see change. Now we know the issues the back end with communication and all of those things we saw with guys who were more established in the NFL. They dealt with it, and I did like what I saw from Malachi Starks as the year went on.
Yeah,
still wasn't amazing, but he did improve. We started to see him come away with the football a little bit. I do think this guy's a gamer. When you show up at Georgia your first day and earn a starting role in just year one, it tells me a little bit of something about you on a defense that's ferocious and one of the best in the country every year. I think that we'll see him get there, but again, so far in the NFL, I haven't seen enough to tell me it's definite, and they're probably going to have to get someone back there with him because he won't move Kyle Hamilton up. That's the big thing.
I'm glad you brought that up because they need to bring in a third safety early on, where that was definitely a miss on Eric DeCosta's
part. It won't be a Loey Gilman.
Yeah, no, it will not be a Loey Gilman. But you lose our Darius Washington in April or May due to that Achilles injury, and then you wait until week five, week six to bring in a Loey Gilman. And that really affected the defense because it Kyle Hamilton, you didn't have the ability to move him all around.
Could it be our Darius Washington? They seem to like him. I don't know that his market is going to be big coming off the injury.
I would be totally fine with them bringing back our Darius Washington. It was a rough final game for him in Pittsburgh, but he's a gamer. Like, he's not the biggest guy in the world. He's not like this ball hawk. Like, he's a very rock solid football player that can help you win games.
Let's get to the second round pick. Mike Green, here's the good news. He finished second on the team in sacks. That was with 3.5, though. Tavius Robinson, who missed considerable time, led the team in sacks with 4.5. Mike Green, I guess, flashed at times.
Yeah. I
But not enough for my liking.
No.
Not for a guy that was supposed to be a first-round pick, if not for the off-the-field issue.
That's exactly it, where you were kind of sold that, okay, we know why he fell in the draft, but he was going to be an instant impact guy. Now, something that went against him was the fact that the Ravens didn't have anything along the edge, and that kind of forced him into more play time than you would have liked. Probably would have liked to use him as more of a designated pass rusher, where he was playing some serious snaps throughout the season, and especially when Tavius Robinson went down with the injury and missed several weeks. But you were definitely expecting more from Mike Green, a heck of a lot more than 3.5 sacks.
Yeah, I said we did a 6-pack of bold predictions, and I said he'd lead the team in sacks, and I thought it would be like 8.5.
Yeah,
and like so 3.5 is for a guy that played as much as he did. Frankly, it's disappointing.
Oh, it definitely is disappointing, and there's a lot of pressure on him to take a big step next year, because it's not like the Ravens have endless money and cap space where, yeah, we expect them to bring in another guy or two, but how this pass rush looks, there's going to be a lot on him.
So more or less confident in Mike Green taking the jump than Malachi Starks?
I'm going to say that I'm more confident in Malachi Starks right now to take that leap.
Beltway Ben, are you confident that Mike Green can take a year two jump?
I am. I would say more confident in him. I expect both guys to at least in the right direction, but I would say more with Mike Green. I think you got to let him rush the passer, and I think that was something I always talked about. The same play, it was against Detroit early in the year, and he's in coverage with Sam Laporta when this is one of his first actual NFL games in a spot where, again, in at Marshall, he's not out there with tight ends much, right? He's rushing the passer. We saw Dafe Owe go to L.A., and the first thing he said was, they let me, you know, do what I'm supposed to do and rush the passer, and that was a big thing for him. So I do think with Minter switching things up a little bit, we'll see more from Mike Green.
Yeah, and it's on this coaching staff where you're expecting this staff to really unearth the potential of these young guys, these recent young high draft picks like Starks and Green.
So now the Emory Jones of it all. And obviously he ended up playing a little bit this year, but he had the shoulder thing, and they said they knew he was hurt when they drafted him, and last year was essentially a redshirt season for Emory Jones.
We played the clip from Eric DaCosta on that podcast where it sounds like he's going to get every single opportunity to win one of those starting guard spots, and he better. Look, we've seen the Ravens take chances on these type of guys, whether it's a David Ajabo, whether it's a Andrew Voorhees, and now Emory Jones. But third round pick, you're talking a day two pick.
And
yeah, he better win a starting job next year.
I'd have to think that neither Andrew Voorhees or Daniel Falele is starting a guard for this team this season.
Falele is a free agent, and you would expect him to walk. Voorhees is still under contract, but he's more of a depth guy at this point. You got to have two brand new starters at guard.
It was colossal disappointment. Beltway Ben, are you buying Emory Jones?
Yes, I absolutely am. I need them to get back to the mean offensive lineman. I mean, Emory Jones does feel like he fit that. He was handcuffed with the injury that he had to deal with, and that kind of dragged into the beginning of the season, and we know kind of where John was with rookies, especially if you miss all of camp. He was never going to get a ton of run, and then he got a little bit. We saw, and then they immediately shot that right down, and we saw it again later in the year, just with injuries and things. But yes, I think a full off season now of participation, he should be a pretty good guy. And I think Eric in the front office is pretty confident that he'll be the starting guard, one of the starting guards, left guard.
So you alluded to Teddy Buchanan. He's coming off an injury. We don't know. Carson Vinson's a project. Bill Alcone and Robert Longerbeam, the two corners they drafted, both got hurt at one time or another. So there's nothing to project there. LaJonte Wester was bad after his first muffed punt. Aeneas Peebles and Tyler Loop are the other two guys. Tyler Loop was good enough until he wasn't, and Aeneas Peebles didn't get any run.
Yeah, I'm very interested in how they play out the kicker position. Do they bring in competition for Loop? If they do bring in someone, is it a legit competition, or is it a air quotes competition like he had with the undrafted kid that last year that didn't even make it to the first preseason game. Loop, it's unfortunate. That kick needs to be made every single time. I mean, when you're talking under 50 yards, and obviously kicks beyond 50 are a big question mark with him. He was only 1 for 4, and you could tell that they didn't really have a ton of trust in him. You mentioned LaJonte Wester. It was so interesting. The first 10 games of the season, he had 12 punt returns, averaged 14.4 yards per return. The rest of the way, Ken, from weeks 11 on, he only fielded 4 more punts. 3 for 14 and then 1 for 11. So 4 punt returns for 25 yards. He just really got
scared. Yeah.
Almost. Like he almost had the yips. And
he had a glitch, too. He'd catch the ball and then he'd stop.
Yeah, so I would expect them to bring in some competition for LaJonte Wester. And you hope that Buchanan's ready for next year. And it'll be tough because that injury occurred towards the end of the season in that game in Cincinnati. But he was a serious bright spot for them. I didn't expect him to get the run that he did day one. And then I believe he was a starter from week 2 on. And he was a useful football player for them.
Coming up next, we have to highlight the Maryland Terrapins. Big win over the weekend against UW at home. Another big game for Andre Mills. We recap next here on The Fan.
Next time on the Big Bad Morning Show.
How great was college basketball Monday night? Also, the O's take the diamond on Monday for exhibition baseball. And reports are that Lamar Jackson has been engaged in off-season activities with the team. But is he ready to sign the extension?
Tomorrow on Sports Radio 105.7 The Fan. This is an Odyssey Sports Minute.
The Celtics beat the Lakers last night. Jaylen Brown had 32 points, and the Celtics are 37-19, second in the East, only behind the Pistons. LeBron James, after the game, talked about Brown for MVP this season, with names like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Nikola Jokic, and Victor Wembanyama all as front runners. He may not be the MVP, but he should absolutely be in the conversation. I'm Chris Fleck.
Inside Access with Ken Wyman and Tim Barbalace. Sports Radio 105.7 The Fan.
But it comes down to the hands of Peterson. He'll drive in. He misses a shot. Bodies go down. Andre Mills comes out of the pack with it. He's got it to Delpino. There's the alley-oop. Mills with a finish with 4.2 seconds to play. And Maryland leads it by 4.
Johnny Holiday with the call right here on 105.7 The Fan. Andre Mills, that was 2 of his 21, helped Maryland defeat Washington 64-60. Andre Mills just named Big Ten Freshman of the Week, coming off, 39 earlier in the week, and now the 21. So he's had himself quite a week. Andre Mills has become a hell of a basketball player and came up big when it mattered most. The other part about this game that was interesting was the guy who threw him the pass. Guillermo Delpino played 27 minutes on Saturday.
He played 28 minutes in Big Ten play entering that game, and he played 27 minutes. And what we saw, interestingly enough, is Darius Adams and Diggy Coit, they didn't play at all. They played a combined 15 minutes, and obviously a lot of that went to Delpino. But give him a ton of credit. He didn't have any turnovers. Obviously, he's run a point. Now, I think that alley-oop at the end was a little bit bold.
Did Johnny Holiday said on the broadcast, if he misses that,
If he misses, because that's the situation.
It's a two-point game.
Yeah, you're dribbling it out. You get fouled. You make your free throws. It's a two-possession game, and then it doesn't matter. But, look, there's a lot of credit to go around in that game. And Washington entered one of the better rebounding teams in all of the Big Ten. Terps crushed him on the boards. I think Solo Washington deserves a ton of credit. He had 14 rebounds in that game, 6 offensive boards,
double-double,
including one where he kicked out to Andre Mills to hit a 3. Elijah Saunders has been very much an up-and-down season.
Big 3 late.
He had some big 3s, but it's Andre Mills, man. Mills had 10 of the Terps' last 13 points to win that one.
Beltway Ben, you think about this. When the season opened, okay, we're hoping Darius Adams would turn into something. I mean, we didn't know what Andre Mills was, but like Isaiah Watts and Miles Rice were supposed to play a lot of time at guard, and they combined for 9 minutes in this game, and that was all Watts, because Rice has got some mysterious injury. Buzz doesn't tell us about any injuries. And as Bo mentioned, Diggy Coit hardly played in this game, coming off the bad game in the last game. It's a weird season for this roster.
It's extremely unusual. And I have to give Buzz credit. We're seeing development, at least with Andre Mills, Darius Adams. I'm a little worried, and I would have liked it a little bit more if Darius Adams contributed a little bit here. I still love the win, right? Washington, they're not great, but it's still a good, fun, exciting win, a game that you were able to pull out down the stretch, and you haven't been able to do that much at all this year. We see Andre Mills do what he did, and as Tim mentioned, Delpino, he's controlling the rock, and he didn't turn the basketball over as a freshman who clearly looked like he didn't belong when we saw him on the court.
No, he was terrible.
It wasn't pretty. Teams were pressing up on him, trying to take the ball away from him early in the year. And yes, he throws that pass, and it's very fun. I mean, if that ball pops off, I mean, it could have gone very bad. But that was like a little bit of swagger. That was like, again, is it the smartest play? No. But it worked out fine for him. It was a very, very good win. It was like a turf one that put a smile on your face for the first time, probably since the Marquette game. Like, I was thoroughly impressed.
Yeah, it was a fun game. And the first 6 minutes of the game, and Maryland can't make a shot. Washington's up by, 8 points at that point. You're thinking, oh, geez, here we go again. But it was one of those back-and-forth games, constant throughout. But for them, look, it's a lost season. It has been a miserable season to be a Terps fan. But to pull out a close game like that, there's value to that. And look, Washington, like Ben said, they just lost to Penn State at home not that long ago. So it's not exactly like a powerhouse team. And you're definitely facing a step up in class when you take on Nebraska on Wednesday.
I'll say this. After they beat Penn State, I was worried they wouldn't win another conference game all year. And they now have 4 conference wins, so that's well above that very, very low bar. Is Delpino a guy that is maybe back next year?
I hope, because in today's day and age, as we've talked about every time we talk about this team and college basketball, you don't find that. 2 years is good, but Delpino, unless magic happens, like, I don't even think at the end of next year he'll be an NBA guy. That's a dude who, when he comes in, you're like, could this be a 4-year player at Maryland and just see the growth year by year? Now, 2 weeks ago, if you'd asked Matt, I would have said no. He might be playing at George Washington down the road, right, or even lower than that, maybe UMBC. But, I mean, yeah, you hope. Again, the Darius Adams of it all does concern me. Didn't like what I saw. I wasn't on the court much. That was one of the big ones. I mean, it was one of the biggest recruits you've ever gotten. You would like to see the growth from him. But Andre Mills doing it as a redshirt freshman, somebody who not many people even knew who he was when he comes to Maryland, it's definitely, there are a few pieces for Buzz. Again, as I said, Delpino, whatever you knew about him or you didn't, if you turn on the game late against Alabama or late against Gonzaga when he's on the court in a blowout, and then you put it on now, or even I remember the first game of the season against Coppin State. Delpino just, I mean, he looked like he didn't belong.
Wasn't it Georgetown where, like, he got pulled, like, 2 minutes
in? Yeah, the ball gets poked away on a press. Mac pokes the ball away from him, and he's out of the game. Now, like, he looked fine. He looked fine the other day.
Maryland defeats Washington 64-60. They're at Nebraska on Wednesday. It's a 7 o'clock tip, which means pregame coverage starts at 6 right here on 105.7 The Fan. But coming up next, Combine started. Everybody's in Indianapolis. I think that includes our friend Jonas Schaefer. Covers the Ravens for the Baltimore Banner, and he joins us next.
On demand, online, on your way to wherever you're going, the free Odyssey app is loaded with opinions, analysis, podcasts, and moments that matter most from the Big Bad Morning Show, Vinny and Haney, and Inside Access. Download it today and search 105.7 The Fan.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Heart Starts Pounding, Horrors, Hauntings, and Mysteries is a weekly podcast hosted by me, Kaylin Moore. Check out Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.